the Women's International News Gathering Service. The National Association of Black Journalists held its 16th annual convention in Kansas City, Missouri, July 24th through the 28th, 1991. The last general session at the conference was a panel titled Power, Is It a Sexual Thing? The panelists were Dr. Julian Malveaux, an economist and syndicated columnist, Dr. Gwendolyn Grant, a psychologist and a columnist for Essence magazine, Dorothy Gilliam, a columnist for The Washington Post, writing a book on racial diversity in the media, and Dr. Niara Sudakasa, an anthropologist who's the first woman president of Lincoln University. The panel was moderated by Bev Smith, a cable TV host for Black Entertainment Television. Bev Smith.
Is power a sexual thing? Who's going to begin?
I might.
I know.
As an economist, my definitions tend to be quite bottom line. And in terms of economic power, African Americans do not have any in general. We need to be clear on that. We look at weekly wages, and the average black woman in 1989 made $301 a week. I put the one in because she needed the extra dollar. If I rounded it off to 300, that just would not be right. The sister needed her money. This is the average black woman, $301 a week. You move on, the average white woman, $334, black male, $348, white male, $482. Now, there's a way of looking at this where black women, white women, black men are clustered, and then everybody else, this big old jump. But when you talk about power, what kind of power can you buy on $300 a week? About the power not to be hungry. That's about the size of it. And some people cannot buy that with what is happening in governments right now. So when Barbara said power, I'm like, what power? And I even went to sleep and had a bad dream about that after she called me and said we were going to do this session on power. I know we can define and redefine, but I think we need to be real clear about the economic realities and distributions at this point in time. Because people don't want to talk about affirmative action anymore. People don't want to talk about resource sharing anymore. I hope people went to the session about the economic status of African American people. We own 3% of the wealth in this country. 3% of the businesses collect 1% of the revenues. We are a $320 billion economy, but at the same time, we spend fewer than 10% of our own dollars on black-owned businesses.
So you're saying,
when we talk about power as a sexual thing, and let's use the word gender, the gender dynamics are that black women have less of it than anyone else does, yeah. But black folk don't have any in this economic network.
So would you slash it then? Power, is it an economical dash instead of sexual sexist thing? Would you be more pleased with that?
Actually, I'd be more pleased if it was like it's an economic thing you wouldn't understand.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know?
I couldn't help but notice, Gwendolyn, that you kept shaking your head as she spoke.
I was her amen corner because we really should talk about power games and the mythology about power in this country, because we have the myth about the black matriarchy that you emasculate men. And that because you have jobs, you have somehow taken something away from a black man. How can you take something away from him when you don't have anything? You can't fall off the floor. So we have to deal with the myths. Women are generally, white and black women, are socialized to be helpless, not to acquire power. Freud, the only thing I believed what he said, Sigmund Freud said, all power is imagined in male symbols. And you're imagining it too. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about that phallic symbol.
Mm-hmm. I knew she was going to get to that. I knew she.
So then that's why. That's
so
why.
Then wait a minute. When you think of the word, let me ask the panel this way. Two-part question. And to Dorothy and Niara, you know that section down there well, don't you? So you have to jump right in on it. Okay. Jump right in on these ladies. Yeah. So then are you saying, if I can get a general consensus, are you saying then that when we think of power, we automatically put a gender attached to it and we don't think of men, particularly black men, and we don't think of women, we think of white men?
Certainly the numbers. Let's look at the United States Senate. Who is in there that looks like us? I mean, us male, us female, us anything. I think they got a couple of white girls in there. You look at the U.S. Congress, four black women. 40 white women, 435 people.
So we
so
are
we
powerless.
Cannot in this country pass a Family and Medical Leave Act. 52% of the people in this country give birth or have the capacity to do so. And if we don't give birth, be aware of the demographics that say we will take care of an older parent or do something where our family will require us to leave our jobs. Yet we cannot pass a Family and Medical Leave Act. I mean, the theme of the, what is this, Bush? I keep forgetting that man's name. Well, the theme of this administration is do it yourself, as opposed to having the government do it yourself. Do it for less. You know, you heard that commercial, do it yourself. I mean, because literally, we are dismantling social policy while
so let me get
more
a general consensus here. Are we as a sex, women, black, powerless?
Let me jump in here.
Good.
Because see, I think we're talking about two things. I think you are right when you say that we do not have power as it has been traditionally defined by the white male system. That means power over. What we do have, however, is personal power. And I think that we have to make that distinction. Yes, it is very, very true. As things are now constituted, as the system is now operating, we have basically a white male system that, in power terms, excludes white women to a large extent, certainly black men and black women. But I think part of this dynamic today has to be that we have personal power, and we may have to be a part of trying to shift that whole paradigm from that white male supremacist system and to find a way for us to let this personal power of black women, of black people, become a part of that equation.
Now, Niara, you've been very quiet. Dr. Niara Sudakasa.
Well, when I'm in the midst of journalists, I know to keep my mouth shut until at least I see the lay of the land. I'm an anthropologist, and we tend to think about the whole question of power, I think, a bit differently. First of all, I ask myself, if we're powerless, as Julianne and at least Dorothy have said. No, well, you didn't say. No, you said personal
Gwendolyn,
power. Gwen.
Yeah.
Then how do we get where we are? You see, Africans say that women hold up half the sky. We are, as African women, very much accustomed to struggle. We have always had roles that are both in the domestic domain, as we call it, anthropologists, that is in the household, and in the public domain. We have always worked outside of the home. We have always had leadership positions within our community. We don't have to talk about the Sojourner Truths to this group. So I'm saying that certainly, if you measure in terms of income, if you measure in terms of positions of authority, and I think it's very useful to distinguish, Julianne, between authority and power, because what you're talking about when you talk about who's in the Senate and who is in these various other positions that of public leadership, basically we're talking about authority positions that are already ascribed in this society pretty much to white folk, and I agree with you on that. We have to struggle very hard to even attain a fraction of those positions of authority that by right ought to be accessible to us as they are to everybody else. But when you talk about power, I think you really have to talk about moving a people, and certainly African American women have always been in the forefront of the movement to advance our people, although here's where the sexual thing comes in. It is usually the African American male who get credit for it. For example, if you read David Lewis's book, and if you read Alden Morris's book on the beginnings of the what we could take to be the beginnings of the modern civil rights movement in Montgomery, you see that it was not just Rosa Parks. There were a whole lot of sisters who did all the work to launch that movement before it was turned over to Dr. Martin Luther King. And we don't want to take anything away from Martin Luther King, but give us a bit of the credit for having done what we've done. And so I would say this. I would say we have precious little authority. We have no economic power to speak of. I agree with Julianne. Well, no, we're not using the economic power we have, Because, see, you can't say that a people generate, how many billions did you say?
$325.
But that's a week. But D. Park Gibson, in his last book, said that we are more. First book said we are a $70 million consumer. And the last book before his death wrote that we are a $200 billion consumer.
But now $300 billion.
$300 billion. So we have $300 billion.
Right.
But what the point that you're making
The point is that we're not turning the money that we have into power. But you see, nobody can give you that. And this is what I think. I think one thing that's different between power and authority. Authority is a position in some kind of hierarchy. You may be able to attain it or not because the rules are not necessarily defined by you. The criteria for getting there are not necessarily within your control. But I firmly believe that power is something that you can assume yourself. And that's what African Americans have always thought. If we considered ourselves to be a helpless people, we would still be enslaved. If we didn't know that there was power to be had if we took control, we wouldn't be where we are. So to some extent, I disagree with my sisters, although I recognize the general.
All right, let me turn that around.
Well, what you must understand here is that I was giving you the Eurocentric definition of power.
Right.
Not the Afrocentric definition of power. We must understand that we're in a culture that defines power for us. Our problem is, as a psychologist, I say to you, is when we internalize the Eurocentric value system. That is our problem. We are not in disagreement.
All right, let me...
Well, just a minute. There's one other thing. From an economic standpoint,
right,
we have to deal with measurement. I mean, Gwendolyn has talked about internal and external things, and I understand what you're saying about not dealing with powerlessness, but we have to deal with some of these yardsticks, whether they're Eurocentric or Afrocentric. How do we negotiate in a society where we have much less than everybody else's? Even if at this time we are operating at the inside of our production possibility curve, hoping there's an economics major out there somewhere who understands what I'm saying.
But we don't.
Okay. What I mean is we are not using our African American resources to their fullest capacity. However, even if we're operating at the very outside of that curve, in other words, doing everything we're supposed to do with what we have, we are still in a position of inequality because we cannot survive. African-American people are not producing everything. We're not producing food. We don't own airwaves. You know, I always ask students at some point to think about, what would happen if all the white folks left? You know, and since you can't use mind-altering drugs anymore and be politically correct or go to the Supreme Court, just think about what would happen if the white folks left. That's a mind-altering drug right there. And then the question becomes, what would we do? How would we operate? How would we behave? It's very important for us to measure where we are in the society because bottom line, goods, services, land, labor, capital are all paid. And the issue is that we have not yet figured out how we are going to get our share. And in the last 10, 15 years, we have allowed other people to define the discussion, the debate. So we've forgotten that. You will find African-American people. I sat in a workshop the other day and heard someone say, well, I don't think I should necessarily treat somebody different because they are black. And I want to be like, bite your tongue and leave the room. Because until we begin to treat each other differently because we are black, we will not be able to get that extra edge, which will allow us to catch up.
If there can be a consensus that we have power, some of us have authority, because some of us do, some, then the question should be, do we as a people, and in particular, do we as black women understand what power do we have, and are we able to unite that power, umoja, put that power together, and do we know how to make it work for us? Now, that should be a burning question as we go into the 90s.
But you have to take step one first, and that is stop viewing one another as males and females, black brothers and sisters, as the problem. And that is our problem at this juncture, that we do what I call victim speak. You know, reason I don't make it in Israel, that woman got the job, you know?
Right.
We've got to stop that.
Right.
We've got to stop seeing each other like that. We survived slavery.
So
on the brother and sister principle.
On Wings for Black History Month, excerpts from the panel, Power, Is It a Sexual Thing? at the National Association of Black Journalists Conference 1991.
So should we change our concept for this panel of women and power, and should we be talking about black people and power?
I think we always have to do both for a couple of reasons. I do think that we have allowed the white media to define our gender problem. A sister said to me, I want you to tell us who the average black woman is. And so I gave you her salary. Let me also give you her occupation, just for the record. A third of all black women still type for a living, okay? About 25% of them still work in pretty much low-wage service jobs. Hospital service workers, food service workers. You see them in your cafeteria lines. You see them cleaning in your buildings. This is 60% of all black women. When you go talk to this sister about the gender problem, she does not have a gender problem. If the brother is out there, she wants him. She would like him to act right, but she is not going to have a high-toned conversation about what's happening between black men and women. That's something that we in the intelligentsia spend our time talking about. And quite frankly, on a Saturday, instead of talking about what's wrong with the brother, I'd rather be hanging with the brother. I mean, on a Saturday, bottom line. But so now, Wednesday's another day. But we need to deal with the extent to which we have allowed other people to define that problem, so we don't need to make that the number one problem that African-American people have.
Okay, but I want to get to the focus.
The part two is that gender is an issue, and the reason why you get the black men are taking my job thing is because black women have moved into employment positions that black men have often been denied. Look at management, for example. In management, there are about 11 million jobs. White women have about 3 million of them. Black men have about 400,000 of them, and black women have about 300,000 of them. So if you had a little pie chart, what you see is white men have most of the jobs. The ratio between white men and women is like this 7-3, but the ratio between black men and women is almost even. So the gender dynamics in our community are very different from the gender dynamics in their community. And that is the responsibility that we have always shouldered. Black women have always worked. There's a concept called the family wage that's just about gone now. But up until about the 1970s, for most white males in non-menial positions, you should have been able to support your family, all of them, from the wage. Whereas in our community, we all had to work to support. So we should not now talk about the woman is taking my job. The woman is doing what she has been doing, which is grabbing opportunity for the support of the black community.
Okay, let's talk about that. Let me open this up. If we do have some power, back to my original point, ladies, and if we do have some authority, do we understand it and do we put it into focus most of the time? There are skewed kind of examples. One I can think of is Kimmy Gray. I don't know whether you all know about Kimmy Gray. She's a favorite of mine. Because Kimmy Gray organized women in an area called Kenilworth, which was a war zone in Washington, D.C., and was able to change, with the aid of the Muslim Brothers, I should say, was able to change that community. So whenever African-American women get tired and say, I'm not going to sit on the back of the bus, my money is just as good as everyone else, then we do exercise our power. And I think, Niara, that's where you were going with it. Mm-hmm. Now, how do we take those on occasional exercising of our power and turn that around so that we can do some of the things that we see our white sister counterparts do, and we cannot ignore that? How can we take that power that we use on occasion? And that is to unite us all, because we don't seem to be able to do that. That's what I'd like to know from my friends here on the panel. Do you hear what they're saying? Why don't you answer that? No, why don't you answer that? No, why don't you answer that?
Well, actually, it's not easy. If it were, we would be doing it. Everybody has talked about that we as women are preoccupied 90% of the time with the nuts and bolts of getting a living. We are working women and have always been. And so when you talk about organization, you have to talk about how are we going to fit that in to this schedule that's concerned with the children and the house and the man that's not right there most of the time and so forth and so on. So
let me stop you, Miss Anthropologist, for just a moment. This is what I do, and my producers go mad when I do this, but I have to ask you, what's new about that? I don't understand what's new about that.
The point is, you were asking how are we going to organize?
Yeah, but
look at the women who organized the women's movement among white women. The women's movement among whites did not come from the working women. These were the women who had time on their hands, who were working on behalf of basically the elite women in the society, and later on this became a movement that embraced some of the working women among whites, and it still hasn't. And that's the reason why you have this schism among white women between those who see themselves as a part of the women's movement and who are not. It is partially a class division. And what is important about what I was saying is that in order to understand why African-American women have not done a lot of the organizing that you're talking about to get together, to move forward, is that in fact we have not, by and large, had the luxury of being able to do that. Where we have devoted our talents to organization is usually through the organizations that we belong to, and the church is very important there. And I think that one of the things that we can ask is how can we, as African-American women, start where we are, you know, throw down your buckets where you are, which is what Booker T. Washington and Martin Luther King and so many other people said, and take the organizations that we do have and turn them into progressive organizations that can move us forward. And I say we have to ask, what are they? And fundamental among them is the church.
Okay, but Yara, when you talk about progressive organizations and you bring up class and white women, I think this is something very painful that we also need to deal with in our community, which is, what is our goal in, quote, working together as black women? Now, getting a Clarence Thomas as a nominee for the Supreme Court would tell you, if you already didn't know it, that all black folks don't sing in the same choir.
Of course not.
But many people's goal is, let us get me some more money. Let us get me some more money, you see, because a lot of MBEWBE legislation has been about creating one or two black millionaires, and little of it trickles down. But I think we have to talk about class in the black community. It's a painful thing to talk about, and I don't think that we're all very clear about it. I went to a conference, and I thought I was throwing down. The folks were clapping and everything, and then this sister from the back of the room, she had about four diamonds on her hand. She said, excuse me, and I saw the diamonds. She said, I don't think I want socialized medicine if my tax dollars have to pay for it. The black women who have discretionary time may not have the moxie nor the motivation to go all the way to the mat on the issues that are important to the majority of black women. However,
however, she said, trying to take back some control of this panel, I think we spend too much time talking about the divisions. I have seen black women unite around an issue, form committees, whether they have 10 diamonds on their hands or no diamonds on their hands, and make that issue work. I'm getting ready to tell you. One of the issues that we have been able to do in our community is voter registration. If black women didn't work on voter registration all over America, there would be no blacks voter registration, because men don't organize and work like we do. If we didn't work in our churches, I'm sorry. That's a fact.
That's true.
That is an absolute fact. If we did not support our churches as women, and no matter what class structure we have, when we get in that church, know we need to raise money to build a larger building, it is the women every class level in that church that does it.
Now, I didn't bring up the class issue for black women. Just remember that.
Okay.
You know,
you see, what I don't want us to do, which I think we spend too much time with, which we buy into white media doing, is we spend too much time talking about the differences between each other. When you put all black sisters in a room, those of us who have money like all of you do, and those of us who don't like I don't,
then we raid your closet and take your clothes.
When you do that, when you cut to the core of our essence as black women, we're all the same. Yeah. We talk about the same struggle. And maybe that's what we need to be doing, is to remind each other, because there is no reason in the world, when black women have been able to change the destiny of a race, there's no reason in the world why we can't exercise more power. Precisely. The white female movement called Now was not about us. I would like to know why we didn't organize and have our own movement, because we need political power. We need to do this. So my question to you is, why haven't we? Are we asleep, as it appears to me, the entire ethnic group, because we are a human race of people. We're not one race versus another. Or are we asleep? Are we women so concerned with this sister belonging to the Deltas and this belonging to the AKA that we can't get our stuff together? I want to know why we can't organize that power.
But Bev, by it, have we defined
wait a minute, Julia.
What's a black woman's agenda? What is a black woman's agenda?
Wait a minute, let Dorothy in.
Okay. I think one of the reasons...
Okay, go on.
I think one of the reasons we haven't done it is we have not understood power.
Good.
I think even today, as we talk, we go off on emotional tangents and we don't keep to the point. And the point that needs to be made here is that certainly we have to communicate and talk about the problems that we have between us, between black women, between black men and women. But the larger issue of power is, where do we train our guns? The forces, I think, that are against us are outside. And we have to look at this in a different way. And that is that everything we do is a strategic move to prepare us to move in a power way against the larger forces. And until we have the right view of this, I don't think we can move forward. For instance, it is really not, the way the question was posed, it is not one or the other. Power is both
an economic
power over, it is authority, and it is personal power, all at the same time. And it is this dualistic thinking, which is really a product of our system and the, one of the traps of the system in which we live, that keeps us in this bind of saying it's either black or white, and it's either this or that, it's either you or me, it's that whole zero-sum game, you know, that we all get caught in. And we have to change our thinking. We have to shift to a more flexible way of viewing problems. And I think your thought about progressive organizations need to lead the way. This organization, the National Association of Black Journalists, is a progressive organization that is leading the way. Last night, this organization named a slate of several women to head it. You know, that is progressive organization, and we're not going to be an organization of women. We're going to be a united organization bringing about change. We individually have personal power, so we must, each of us, examine ourselves, our strengths, and see what do we bring to this external situation.
Dorothy Gilliam, Julian Malveaux, Gwendolyn Grant, and Niara Sudakasa were the panelists. Bev Smith was the moderator. The panel, titled Power, Is It a Sexual Thing?, was recorded July 27, 1991, at the annual convention of the National Association of Black Journalists. Reporting for Wings, I'm Catherine Davenport.
Since this event took place, a U.S. Family and Medical Leave Act was signed by President Clinton in 1993. Back in 1991, there were 4 black women in Congress. In 2024, there are 28 voting representatives who identify as black women, plus 1 voting senator and 2 non-voting delegates, one from Puerto Rico and one from Washington, D.C. Nearly 20% of all women in Congress identify as black. Wings thanks our supporters, including your community radio stations, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, author of the book The Gift in the Heart of Language, The Maternal Source of Meaning. The original Wings sound logo was created by Maggie Payne. I'm Frieda Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Join the SFU SOCA, Students of Caribbean and African Ancestry, all throughout February for events in celebration of Black History Month. On February 1st, at the sub-social stage, from 3 to 5 p.m., is the kickoff ceremony with a focus theme of African Americans and the arts. On February 9th, games and movie night in the SOCA room in the Student Union Building, room 1430, on the first floor, from 6 to 10 p.m. February 16th, get your groove on with a dance workshop held in subroom 2410, second floor of the Student Union Building, from 6 to 8 p.m. And finally, February 24th, support SOCA in recognition of 30 years with a gala event held in the sub ballroom, fifth floor of the Student Union Building from 5:30 to 9:30 p.m. For more information, visit the SOCA Instagram at SFUSOCA or drop by their space in the Student Union Building, room 1430.